Good afternoon and welcome to the Beauty Files with Juanita. I am Juanita and I'm so glad you can join us today. Happy Friday, everyone. And all of those people who are wondering what this show is about, if you heard the last time we were on the air, we talked about we were going to do a show about the feet. Guess what? We are doing a show about the feet. It's called Relief for the Feet, or shall I say Relief for My Feet, because our guests, we have really, really good guests that are going to tell you exactly what you need to be doing, what you should be doing, and what is going on with your feet. First, we're going to be joined by Dr. Aparna Degrala. Now, she is the chief of podiatry at Doctors Community Hospital. She's got a lot of credentials. She's board certified. She's co-vice president of the American Association for Women Podiatrists. And the list goes on and on, and her company is called Renaissance Foot Care. I hope I'm saying that right, Dr. Degrala. If I'm not, you definitely need to correct me. And later on, we're going to be joined by...
It's Renaissance Foot and Ankle Center, but that's fine.
Oh, Renaissance Foot Ankle Center. Okay, well, and it says it all. And the doctor has been treating me for an ailment, and we're going to touch on that in a minute. And later on, we're going to be joined by Dr. Goldstein, and she's going to give us some holistic health treatment advice on how you can attack this issue a different way, a different avenue. And then later and finally, we're going to be joined by Wendy Bumgardner. She is a certified walking expert, and she's going to help us learn how to better walk on these precious, precious feet. And I never knew that there was a certain way you're supposed to walk. So, you know, the lesson learned, again, I didn't know. So welcome to the Beauty Files, Dr. Degrala. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. And how are you?
I am doing fantastic. I'm going to get right to it because I know you're on a time restraint and I don't want to mess you up. But what is going on with people and the feet and the issues that I have, which I will share to everyone? I have what is called a heel spur or plantar fasciitis. Now, doctor, I know that if this is not a common foot ailment, give us some common foot ailments that are coming up more and more on a frequent basis.
Well, plantar fasciitis is actually a very common foot ailment. In addition, we have neuromas, bunions, hammer toes, ankle sprains, and a lot of these can be attributed to shoe gear and improper shoe gear. And especially for women, it comes down to high heel shoes.
The dreaded high heel shoe. Okay.
Yes.
Now, what you said something about neuroma. What is that exactly?
So a neuroma is an inflamed nerve, and it's an inflamed nerve in the ball of your foot. So especially when we're wearing high-heeled shoes, we tend to put a lot of pressure on the ball of our feet, and that causes pressure on the nerve in the area, and that can get inflamed. So that's a neuroma. Another problem in that area as well is hammer toes. You start to contract the tendons and causing hammer toes, which can become painful. In addition, when we're specifically talking about high-heeled shoes, we can also have ankle sprains. Your ankle's not in a very stable position, so therefore the instability of the ankle will cause sprains at the ankle. And the list just goes on and on.
So now let me stop you here for a second. So we're basically saying, doctor, that high heel shoes are the one. I can honestly say it's probably one of the main culprits of us girls having all these feet issues.
Right. We can have foot deformities that we would have had even if we weren't wearing high-heeled shoes. The high-heeled shoes will make it more painful or make it painful when it wouldn't have been painful. Now, I'm not saying don't wear high-heeled shoes. I love my high-heeled shoes. I wear them. But we just have to be sensible. We can't walk 10 blocks in high-heeled shoes. So we just have to be sensible about what type of how much of a height of the high-heeled shoe we're wearing, how long we're wearing them, and what are we doing in them? Are we walking a lot, standing a lot? And, of course, there's going to be consequences to that.
Well, you know, here's an interesting fact, and I've got this from Renaissance Foot and Ankle Center, your website. It said, did you know that the foot has 26 bones, 33 joints, 107 ligaments, 19 muscles, and numerous tendons? No, I didn't know that. I didn't know we had that many bones. But I also didn't know about the muscles.
And most people don't know that. And most people don't know that.
Because we abuse our feet. I will honestly say again, you know, there's going to be a show next year. It's going to chronicle me losing weight. But I know that the weight has something to do with the fit. I mean, because you can't possibly have these feet carrying all this weight.
Right. And, you know, we don't think about our feet till they hurt. So we need to be good to our feet. And, yes, weight can contribute. And one interesting fact that most people don't know is every step that we take, we increase the force on our feet by 3 times our body weight.
Oh.
So with every step, it's 3 times the body weight that we're putting pressure onto our foot. So when you think about that, we put our feet through a lot through our lifetime. So we need to take care of them. And, you know, one of them is sensible shoes. And making sure that if you do have pain, you need to take care of it. And it's not always just going to go away because we're adding that weight as well to that painful foot.
Oh, my God. And my treatment for what I'm having now, because I will tell you people this, you know, the doctor knows I am like still trying to fight the dreaded shot, but I know this will work. You can explain exactly what this shot is or the treatment for what I have, which is a heel spur. And I will tell you, this is the most painful thing I have ever experienced in my life. I have never woke up early in the morning and barely can walk.
Yeah, and what plantar fasciitis is, it's a ligament called a plantar fascia, and itis just means inflammation of that ligament, and it can cause a heel spur. So one thing I want to be clear about is the heel spur doesn't cause the pain. You can live happily ever after with the heel spur as long as you stretch out that ligament. So when it becomes inflamed, yes, it can be so painful you can barely put your foot down or your heel down the floor first thing in the morning. You know, there's several treatment regimens that we need to do to resolve this. One, we need to get rid of the inflammation that's being caused. And number two, we need to stretch out that plantar fascia so it doesn't keep doing the same thing over and over again. And that means, you know, time to be able to contribute to stretching, icing that area. And then, of course, you were talking about the injection. And the injection is a steroid injection to help decrease the inflammation that's occurring in that area. And also, in addition, I also prescribe for my patients anti-inflammatories.
Now, you just got me on something, because I was under the impression, and I guess I apologize, I thought that the heel spur was the plantar fascia. I didn't realize that that was two different things.
No, the heel spur is the bone. It's the bone formation on the heel bone, which is called a calcaneus. The plantar fascia is a ligament that attaches to that part of the bone.
So what I'm going through, it's not that bone thing, it's the inflammation.
Right, right.
Oh.
Your pain is being caused by the inflammation, not by the bone itself or the spur.
Oh, my gosh. And all this time, I'm like, I got a heel spur. I mean,
and that's a misconception for a lot of patients. And they think we need to get rid of the heel spur, which means surgery. Definitely not. The heel spur can stay, and it can be there forever. And you can have no pain as long as we stretch out the plantar fascia.
Okay. Now, you know, winter is coming up, and ski and snow and ice. Is there any advice that we need to be wary of? I mean, I'm looking on your site. You have this great website, by the way, people, Renaissance Foot and Ankle Center. You have to go on the website. They have a newsletter. It's called Footprints. That's so cute. But they have one topic I was reading. It's called Winter Sports Injuries. Are you prepared? Are we prepared? Really? I mean, when we fall on the ice, What's the first thing we should do? I mean, if you twist your ankle, what? How do you know you didn't break it? If you, you know, you're outside for a long period of time, how do you know you don't have frostbite? If you can't feel your toes, is it because it's cold or is it because it's frostbite?
Right. So number one, as far as ankle sprains, you know, you should wear good shoes. Make sure, you know, they're slip-resistant shoes, especially with ice outside. And if you do have an ankle sprain, first thing you do is you get off that foot and ankle, you rest it, and ice it. Ice the ankle, which will decrease inflammation, which will control pain. You want to wrap it with like an ACE bandage, and you want to just keep an eye on it. And if it's not getting better, within the next, you know, 2 to 3 days, you want to have someone look at it. How do you know if it's a sprain or a fracture? You won't know until somebody, a professional, actually looks at it or takes an X-ray. So if you suspect that it might be a fracture or even an ankle sprain, it's probably best to just go ahead and either, depending on the intensity of the pain, go to the ER or urgent care center or make an appointment with a podiatrist to take a look at it. And the number two point that you brought up is frostbite. Frostbite, it is basically when the foot, or usually it happens at the toe level, is not getting enough blood to the area, so the tissue dies. I have to say frostbite doesn't happen very quickly, but if you're spending long periods of time outside in the ice and the snow, and you're not well insulated with nice warm wool socks and good shoes that, you know, are water resistant, yes, this can happen. And anytime you have extreme pain in the toes that's not being resolved, you know, with just coming inside and, you know, getting warm again, and then there's discoloration at the tips of the toes, there's always a possibility of frostbite. And, again, you should get it checked out by a professional.
And should we do something besides all that to, you know, just to make sure that, I don't know. I mean, you know, you can't help but fall on the ice. I mean, you know, I guess your advice should be that once that happens, if you feel, you know, the pain that it's so severe, you really should go and make sure that it's nothing serious.
Right, right. It's always best to get it checked out. I have patients, I mean, it really depends on your pain level as well. I have patients who walk on a fracture for days because, you know, their pain level, they're able to tolerate a lot more pain. Whereas there's somebody else that might, you know, just have sprained it just a little bit, but come in right away to get it checked out. It's always best to be on the safe side and get it checked out, because if it is something severe, such as a fracture, and you continue to walk on it, it can definitely get worse. And
the That's other what I was going to ask you is, next. I was going to ask you that next. If you walk on it without, you know, after, mm-hmm. if that happened, and you don't get it treated, can something worse happen to it if you don't get it treated?
Yes. If it's a fracture, yes. If it's even an ankle sprain, if it's a really bad ankle sprain and you don't treat it appropriately, such as getting off of it, and sometimes you have to even maybe get on crutches if it's even an ankle sprain. Yes, such as ankle arthritis and chronic instability of the ankle. And ankle arthritis or even foot arthritis can occur because of this. You can also be injuring some of the tendons in that area. So, yes, definitely more severe things can happen, and then it can happen down the line. It may not happen right away. So, Yes, you do definitely want to take care of it.
And foot issues in association with diabetes, is that a problem or something that you're seeing a lot of too?
Yeah, I mean, especially with diabetes, incidence is increasing in our population these days.
Right.
And definitely seeing a lot of issues, such as, you know, lack of circulation, calluses and corns in areas because there's excess pressures in certain areas of the feet, and infections, everything from bacterial to fungal infections as well. But, you know, one thing I recommend for all diabetic patients, even if you're a well-controlled diabetic patient, should always have a yearly foot exam by your local podiatrist, and you should have a podiatrist on board at all times. If you suspect that there's any issues with your feet, get it checked out, just to be sure that there's nothing more severe going on. As far as, you know, different treatments, especially for infections, you know, you want to get it checked out because there's, when you localize the problem early on, you can solve it much faster with no excessive surgical intervention or anything. And especially when it comes to infections, just fungal infections, they're, you know, easy to treat, especially skin fungus with the topical medications. And the other big problem we have, diabetics as well as our regular healthy population, is nail fungus.
Right.
And especially in the winters, we tend to spend a lot of time in shoes and socks, and it gets moist, and fungus loves dark, moist areas. But, you know, you should, and when you start to see nail discoloration, nail thickening, have it checked out because there are treatment choices. And one of the great things that we have these days is laser treatment that has been having really good results with, you know, very little side effects. So definitely need to get those things checked out.
You know, before I let you go, Dr. DeGrella, there was just one last question that I had, and that is concerning, you had made a point about calluses and things of that nature. You know how you go to the nail, you know how you go to the nail salon and they use a razor or something on your foot to get rid of calluses? Is that a good thing?
No. You know, one thing is they don't know your medical history, and if they do use a razor, and what if, you know, there are some issues with circulation, what if that area doesn't heal? It is a state by state, but most states don't allow nail technicians to use razors or blades on the skin. So you really need to check that out with your state rules according for that. But no, I would say, you know, don't do that. The best thing to do is really moisturize your feet with a cream, not a lotion, and then use something like a pumice stone or a foot file to take care of the calluses. And it's okay. Go ahead and get a pedicure to really get rid of those difficult-to-treat calluses and corns, but no razors and no blades.
Dr. DeGrella from the Renaissance Foot and Ankle Center, thank you so much for that that serious medical history and lesson about the foot. I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure our audience appreciate it. Again, you need to check out Renaissance Foot and Ankle Center online, and you'll see all the information about Dr. DeGrella and the wonderful things that they're doing at this place, because I can attest to it because I am a patient. And, you know, definitely take care of your feet. And definitely if there is an issue or problem, ladies, with the heels, stop wearing those heels like 18-hour days and thinking that it's cute, because there's nothing cute about being carried away because your feet hurt. Coming up next, we're going to have Dr. Goldstein. She's going to give us a holistic approach on how to deal with the feet, including reflexology. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Beauty Files. Today, it's Relief for the Feet. Joining me now is Dr. Goldstein. She is with the she's a board certified naturopath. She's a holistic health practitioner. Her credentials are so amazing. I can go on and on, but I'm going to let her tell you. She's with the Washington Institute of Natural Medicine, and I will tell you, people, I went there for a reflexology treatment, and I was floating. I that was the best thing I've ever done for my feet. I've never done it, and she's going to explain to you exactly what reflexology is, and we're going to be also joined by Robert White, who is a massage technician, certified massage technician, and he's going to join in with the conversation as well with the doctor. Welcome, guys, to the Beauty Files.
Thank you so much. Yes, this is Dr. Goldston, and we do have here Robert White. Robert?
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
How are you?
So now, there's a lot of people who, don't know what reflexology is, have no clue what it does. What is reflexology?
Well, reflexology, it's a mapping of the hands and feet. And the theory is that all the nerve endings in the hands and feet connect to the interior of the body. So as an example, if a person were to look at a mapping of the feet based on reflexology, the toes, for instance, are related to the head. And on the toes area, for instance, you can apply acupressure on the toes, and in that area, it would work on problems in the head or face. So, for instance, if somebody had sinus pressure, then a practitioner would be working on that particular region. And then as you move down the feet and you look at the mapping based on a reflexology chart, then you start getting into the other organs. Just below the toes, there's an area that works on vision and the lungs. And more towards the interior, like in the arch of the foot, we have areas that help with the liver, large intestines, small intestines. And then we get down to the heel, and we're dealing with areas related to the hip and the knees, sciatic nerve, for instance. And
okay,
when you
apply
pressure
to
all
of
these areas, it helps treat those areas.
Let me stop you 1 second, Dr. Goldstein. You just hit a point. You said the heel affects the hip and the knee?
Correct.
That is so interesting because I have a heel issue and it hurts a lot. It hurts, I have plantar fasciitis. I keep butchering that up.
Robert can comment to that for you.
Well, and the question I was going to ask is that, my heel hurts, but it is affecting my knee.
Yes.
And my hip.
Well, part of it is due to your body's alignment, and part of it is related to the nervous system, or what they call meridians, based on Chinese and Japanese medicine, because we believe it's all connected. So, for instance, the heel, if you work those points on the heel, it's going to help your hips and knees, and then as a result, if you have pain there, it's giving us indications that there's an imbalance in that area of the body it's connected to.
Oh, my gosh. That is so amazing. And what does a person do, or what would you do if I'm having this issue, or Robert White? What happens when if I come in and that it's clearly affecting other parts of my body? I cannot believe you just said that. It is actually affecting, my alignment. What do you do for that?
Well, I'll let Robert speak to that because it's not, the alignments are definitely a big part of it and the reflexology points, but Robert can even speak to the orthopedic conditions related to it. So, Robert, why don't you go ahead?
Sure.
Great.
Sometimes when people come in, we have to gather enough information, enough data in order to assess to try to assess the experience that the client is having. So sometimes I may perform something called a posture analysis where I ask the person to stand in front of a chart with form-fitting clothes, and I'll take images of that person in all three planes, and they're two-dimensional images, and I put them on, and I could either look at them with the naked eye and pinpoint the misalignments, and or I can place that image into a program where the program actually pinpoints the misalignment. What that gives the practitioner data to basically plan a line of treatment, a treatment plan for that client based on what he sees. Now, reflexology may be able to help that pain in the client's feet. And along with that, orthopedic massage and myoskeletal alignment may be also to help. And let me just point out that, you know, when we're walking, you know, however we're walking, we may have the pigeon toe, the bow leg. All of that has an effect on our alignment. Even if you have that pebble in your shoe, that has an effect on our alignment. So we have to look at, you know, exactly what the source of the misalignment or dysfunction is.
That is fantastic. Does that also help if a person comes to you and they have an issue or problem with balance or keeping their balance? Can you do the same thing as far as that?
Well, depending once again what the source of their condition is, balance
okay.
can be structural, which means it could be in the feet, musculoskeletal, or it can be chemical. It can be cranial. It can be chemical. It can be something dysfunction in the brain. So we don't know. We have to do a proper assessment.
What is a typical session like? If a person comes in and they want to get reflexology or they want to get something to help ease the pain or massage the pain of a foot heel or whatever. What is a typical session like?
Well, first, what I like to do with the clients is do a verbal intake, and many times, what is interesting is clients will call and say, well, my feet hurt and I'm not sure what I should do. So I give them a couple of options. I said, well, we can always do a physical assessment based on homeopathic and naturopathic theories and come up with a treatment plan with homeopathics and herbs and then also recommend the reflexology, or a person could go right into doing a reflexology treatment. And if they do a reflexology treatment, they come in and then they would fill out a questionnaire. And many people, and you think, well, why do I need to fill this out? Well, we need to know the person's health history because we can better treat them if we have a good health history. And then we will ask questions about what's going on with them physically, what are they feeling in their feet. And then based on that, we will determine what points that we want to work in the feet that we need to concentrate on. You know, with every person, it's a little bit different, so we might want to concentrate, for instance, more so on the toes on one particular person, and another we might want to focus more on the arch, depending on physical assessments.
So is reflexology different from, say, massage treatment? Is there a difference as far as what's being done?
Well, reflexology is a technique that massage therapists will use, or bodywork practitioners, which are certified reflexologists. You'll see an overlap in the techniques. They're applying pressure, and in sometimes like little circular movements, what are kind of similar to what might be like a sweet massage kind of technique. So there is an overlap within the professions.
So is there any type of, like, say, for instance, after I left you, do you have someone go home with some materials or some advice, or you say, you know, okay, when you get home, I want you to do this with your feet until you see me again? Or, I mean, do you offer advice as to what they can do when they get home besides coming back there again? Because, you know, that would be my alter. I would come back again until the problem was solved. Mm-hmm. Or alleviate the pain.
Robert can comment on that.
Okay,
usually when someone comes in, you know, based on what the issue is and based on what our treatment is, we can show them different exercises and different things to do, such as you can actually roll your foot over a ball for the plantar fasciitis, or if someone has maybe some tendonitis, you know, in the ankle, there's certain things they can do. We can show them how to massage. It's very simple. But for other issues that may be a little more difficult to handle for the lay person, we offer them naturally to come back to the Washington Institute. And let me note also that, you know, we here at the Washington Institute, we love to educate our clients on their health and on their bodies. So there's, for what I do with the feet also, there are different websites I can send them to, and I have a wealth of information, such as, did you know that there's also something called a shoe push-up test for the tennis shoe or the running shoe, to where that if it doesn't bend naturally like the foot, when the foot is not in the shoe, then that is not the shoe for you to get. So we offer a wealth of information on really taking care of that foot and the rest of the body as it comes.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We might recommend some homeopathics to take by mouth. So, for instance, there could be an inflammatory process in the feet. And, you know, that does happen frequently for people standing for long periods of time. I know personally because I sing in a chorus, and last night I was standing on my feet for 3 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I have some homeopathics that are specific to healing the joints, and that can be taken by mouth. There's liquids and tablets, which are fantastic. And then I actually even created my own formulas, homeopathic formulas, that I have a homeopathic pharmacy make for me that are specifically for massaging on the feet or areas of pain. And then we have even, you know, foot fungus creams, too, you know, because sometimes you're dealing with that.
Go back, doctor. I'm really interested in what you said you created. You create your own homeopathic regimen. I mean, where can we get that? Or where could I get that? What am I saying? Where could I get that?
Well, right now it's just dispensed through the Washington Institute. They're considered behind-the-counter private remedies. What I do is I sit down and I do research based on complaints that I might have heard from particular clients, and I find that, well, I really need to make a formula for that. And then I submit it to the homeopathic pharmacy that I work with, and then they create it for me because then they meet all the particular guidelines of the FDA because homeopathics are controlled by the FDA.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yes,
you can get the products can be obtained here at the Institute.
Okay, so, but this is based on me coming in, you doing a, because I'm sure I just can't say, hey, you know, I got to get something. What you got back there behind that counter? I mean, you have to come to you, you give me an assessment, you tell me, you know, what you recommend, and you mix this up yourself? This is fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have the pharmacy mix it for us.
But you tell the pharmacy what to put in the particular.
Correct.
See, I love that. I love stuff that where you get it that it's for you and you only, not for you and 10,000 other people. Let's see if it works. I love that.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of formulas that I've done research on for a lot of different things. For instance, people that get congestion and headaches, I created my own formula for that. You know, for arthritis, for foot fungus, for women with menstrual problems. I found that there just weren't enough formulations out there to choose from the general manufacturer. So I sat down and did research on a lot of different ailments. And then, you know, since I have the homeopathic pharmacies that we already purchased from, some of them are able to, you know, manufacture for me, and then they create them for the Washington Institute.
Okay, so for those of us who don't know what a homeopathic pharmacist is versus our local Walgreens, CVS pharmacist, what is the difference?
Well, homeopathic pharmacies just work with that specific type of natural substance. So in other words, they don't use conventional drugs like Sudafed or Tylenol, but they're specifically governed to mix natural substances. For instance, as an example, there is a plant called euphrasia. Well, euphrasia is the eyebright herb, and in homeopathic form, they take a part of that original herb in a tincture form, and then they mix it with water and alcohol, and then they shake it up, which is called succussion. And they'll repeat it numerous times and use different quantities of water in their mixing. And when that happens, the FDA determines that to be a legal drug in the homeopathic category. And that's kind of where homeopathy is is born. And it originated with Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, and he was a physician who was dissatisfied with conventional drugs. And this is from, you know, many years ago when they used to use poisonous substances.
Yeah, exactly.
He just was dissatisfied with conventional medicine, and he started to do some research and practice on himself and his family members.
Now, should I ask my doctor or let my doctor know that I'm getting this or doing this? I mean, do I need a doctor's permission to say, okay, I'm going to the Washington Institute of Natural Medicine, and they prescribe me a wonderful mix, a homeopathic mix. Can I take it? Do I need that permission?
You do not need your medical doctor's permission, although it's nice to inform them as to what you're doing.
Okay.
Although medical doctors, many of them don't understand what homeopathy is, and we need to educate them in some cases. You know, I'm a nurse also, and, you know, I've worked with many medical doctors, and they'll refer clients to me, but I do have to educate them and help them understand that homeopathy is very safe. And homeopathy can be used very safely with conventional drugs in comparison to the full form of an herb, which could have a drug interaction.
Right, right. I totally agree. I think homeopathic medicine is far more safer, I mean, me personally, than regular. But I think maybe that's the reason why they're not educated, or we have, you know, we have doctors who won't prescribe you to us because it is safer.
Yeah, well, it definitely, I mean, if you look at the studies, homeopathy is extremely safe. And I even have doctors in hospice settings and nursing home settings that will refer clients to me because they know what I will recommend will not have a drug interaction with that patient's medications that the nurses are getting, you know, on the nurse's cart in the facilities. But a lot of doctors don't know the difference between homeopathy and herbs. Because herbs, for instance, if you took the herb hawthorn berry and you took it along with your blood pressure medication, both of those have similar actions. So, for instance, the hawthorn berry, which treats blood pressure, and you take your blood pressure drug at the same time, your blood pressure actually might go too low because you're getting too much of a substance to lower the blood pressure. But with a homeopathic blood pressure remedy, you can take it with your blood pressure medication, and it's just going to help the drug work, and no side effects.
Oh, my gosh. I think I have to let you go. I'm sitting here. I got 1,000 questions, but I think I'm running out of time. But I do have, I got one more question. Well, I have several, but do you take insurance? Is insurance accepted, or is it just out of pocket? Because someone sent me that question, do you take insurance?
Yes, well, we don't deal directly with insurance companies typically. We do give clients forms to submit for reimbursement, but it's extremely favorable for flex plans. Many people have flex plans at their government job or within a company that work at, and we even describe that further on our website for the Washington Institute as well.
And if someone wants to make an appointment to get an assessment. Me, my feet, my mom, her arthritis. I have friends that have everything going on. Should they just call and make an appointment with the Washington Institute of Natural Medicine, or do you do the assessment?
Well, there's a couple options of what people can do. If they know exactly what they want, you can give a call and set up an appointment. Or if they're kind of curious and they're not sure what they want, they may want to look at our website and kind of click around and look at the different practitioners and the different services that we have to offer. And then they can kind of, you know, look at definitions, see what the descriptions are that would fit them. For instance, you know, if they are having that foot pain, they might want to look at some of the massage practitioners' biographies and descriptions of their services. And if you want to prepare for an exam, there is a form on our website that can be filled out even ahead of time. So it can save time once you get here, or, you know, it's an intake form, or you can even just come here and just fill it out. And for our website, the address is naturalhealthdc.com, which is very easy to remember.
Say that again,
naturalhealth.com.
Naturalhealth.com.
Naturalhealthdc. naturalhealthdc.com.
Oh, naturalhealthdc.com. Naturalhealthdc.com. Dr. Goldstein, Robert White, it's been such a pleasure. I wish I could spend more time just talking about this. I'm overwhelmed with I still have more questions, but I have to let you go because I have another guest. But I thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. And those of you who did not get that website, we'll put it on our website so you can get linked to it. And we will be right back. We'll be talking with a walking expert in just a minute. Thank you. Welcome back to the Beauty Files, our conversation about relief for the feet. We're joined by Wendy Baumgartner. She is a certified marathon coach. She's also an avid walker, and she has been in several marathons, including one of my favorite, the Avon Walk for Breast Cancer, and she's participated in several marathons. So it's safe to say, Wendy, you know a lot about walking.
I do, yes.
Welcome to the Beauty Files.
Thanks.
Now, how did you become a walking expert? How did you start this?
Well, I started off walking with the sport of Volksmarching. The International Volkssport Association, they have clubs throughout the United States, and their goal is just to get people out walking and enjoying a lovely route through their own towns and cities. And so I started doing that back in the 1980s and rose to the top of their executive council. And then at that time, I created their website, and once they invented the Internet, and now I'm the walking expert on the Internet.
Now, you know, it's funny that, you know, we're talking to a person who will guide us and tell us what we're doing right or wrong about walking. But walking to me, and I'm sure everyone else thinks that, or certain people think that, assumes that it's just as natural as breathing. But there is a method to the madness as far as walking is concerned.
Well, there definitely is, and your posture makes such a difference in how your whole body feels while walking and after walking. And many of us don't pay any attention to our posture. We're just sort of hunched over, going about our business, and nowadays everyone's texting as they walk or checking their iPhones. And, and so they're not able to breathe fully and let their body get into the natural mechanics that it would have when we were out walking without being attached to all of our purses hanging off one side of the body and your phone in the other.
Yeah, as you say that, I'm sitting in my chair and I'm sitting straight and I'm breathing because I'm like, oh my God, she's explaining exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm sitting here hunched over and I'm not really breathing like I'm supposed to when you're walking, because you're absolutely right. We're not even concerned. We're not even thinking about walking. We're concerned about making sure that that text message got through.
Right.
So walking versus running.
I just participated in a marathon in Vegas this weekend, and people were texting while they were walking a
marathon
at night.
That's ridiculous. Now, that is ridiculous. That's, you know, I don't, well, you know, I have a thing about the whole walking versus texting thing, because especially when you see people walking off of things, hitting things, running into things. But again, a lot of people just assume that when you walk, it's just, I'm just walking. Walking versus running for fitness, which one would you say is better?
Well, of course, I think it's each is what you're going to enjoy. I enjoy walking. I haven't been able to run due to some other issues for many mm-hmm. years. Some people love running. They love getting out there and having their blood just, you know, going and breathing hard and sweating and feeling like they're exerting. But then there are those of us who want to get out and enjoy what's around us and, you know, see it and enjoy it without the breathing hard and the stress. We can still get your blood flowing really well with a brisk walk, but you aren't necessarily sweating and you aren't breathing hard and you're able to keep up a conversation with a friend if you want to go walking with a friend.
Oh.
So that's why I prefer walking and I enjoy walking.
And what about shoes? What about proper shoes? I mean, should we be doing this great, brisk, or wonderful walk in flip-flops?
Flip-flops are particularly bad for being able to walk well with good posture and body mechanics.
Right.
It's important to get shoes that have enough structure to them that they can properly support your feet and cushion them, especially for those of us who are over age 40. Our feet actually lose the cushioning that's naturally built into them, and our bones have gotten broken down with everything we've done in life, especially things like having children, because pregnancy can really help loosen up the ligaments on your feet, and you can end up with all sorts of problems. But you see so many people, young people, getting into the minimalist shoes that are very unstructured, or you'll see them,
right.
They think they're doing their feet good by wearing ballet flats at work rather than wearing heels. But
God.
In fact, they're wearing shoes that don't have much structure to them and aren't giving their feet good support and cushioning. So it's especially important in your fitness activities that you're wearing good shoes that have a little cushioning and have some nice support to them. In other words, yes, you do need to go buy some running shoes. And then when you go out for your fitness walk, slip into those so that you're doing your feet some real good and able to get the most out of your walk during your walk.
So now, is there a difference between running shoes and walking shoes?
There are some differences. They're actually becoming less and less because of the trends nowadays for running shoes do not have a big built-up heel. Walkers don't need a big built-up heel in their athletic shoes. But now the trend running shoes is going in that direction. They decided a lot of runners shouldn't have a big built-up heel.
Right.
So many more of the running shoes that you will see are perfectly appropriate for fitness walking.
And they are,
meanwhile,
they're different.
Many of the walking shoes, or what things you see designated as walking shoes,
right.
are actually very stiff and not very good for fitness walking. They're often very good for standing if you have a job where you have to stand a lot, such as a working retail or a cashier, or
right.
even perhaps as a nurse where you're doing a lot of walking and standing throughout the day. Those sort of walking shoes can be appropriate, but if you want to get out and do a brisk walk during your lunchtime or a great 10-15 minute walk during your break to get out of your office and do your body some good, then you're going to want shoes that are a little more flexible and much more like the running shoes.
So does price or cost, is that a factor to determine a good walking shoe, or what should we be looking for? I'll go online and I'll look and I'll say, I need a good walking shoe. What should I be looking for? And does price play a big role in that?
Price can, because so many of us want to go down to the local shop and buy whatever's on sale for $25. Usually those are very bottom-of-the-line shoes that are not well-designed with good support. And instead, I find in the long run you save money if you find the best running shoe store in your area. You look up the one where the serious runners go, and you go there. and they will fit you for dues. It will usually be about the $80 range, and sometimes you can get them on special. But almost every shoe that they have in their shop is a well-constructed shoe that when they put you into the right exact type, whether you need a motion control shoe or you don't need one, they will make sure you get the right sort of shoe to fit your feet. And they know walkers. They aren't just don't just cater to runners. They also do cater to walkers. So I always try to find those stores as my first choice for to go to find good quality shoes and to have staff that know what they're doing when they sell you shoes rather than just buying
the out of my mouth, because that was going to be my next question. Should I have someone professionally fit a shoe for me, or should I just go in and just say, I'm a size 9? Should you sit down with someone and tell them, hey, I'm going to walk here, I want to flex here, I don't want my feet to feel like I'm walking on bricks or carrying bricks. Help me out.
Exactly. And so the key is, really look, find out where do the runners go in your area. And often you can find that out by looking at local running events and seeing what shops may be sponsoring some of their races or ones that sponsor running groups. And they're wonderful small chains, small local shops run by people who are really dedicated. You know, the sort of businesses we want to support.
Yeah. And should I be using the same shoe that I'm walking with every day? Should that be my everyday shoe as well, or should I not do that?
The thing to keep in mind is that athletic shoes have about a 300 to 500 mile lifespan. So if you spend 8 to 10 hours a day in that shoe, it's going to wear out faster. It may not look worn out, but you are going to be beating down the cushioning. So if you are going to be doing a lot of sitting around, it's probably better to have on a comfortable pair of shoes. And then when you go do your fitness walking or your brisk walks during the day, so I slip into the good pair of athletic shoes, or at least alternate shoes. It's often nice to have two pairs going, one that you've been wearing a couple of months, and then start a new pair and alternate them each day. That'll also help you know when the oldest pair is now too old and has lost all of its cushioning and support. You'll be able to really feel the difference between the two.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how often should we change our shoe? But I guess the indication would be maybe a hole at the bottom or something like that. Because I've seen runners, with holes in the bottom of their shoes. I've seen them, they just think it's cute. I think it's insane. Holes in the bottom of the shoe, really?
I've actually almost worn a hole in the bottom of my shoes and without looking, because I just didn't look. And I looked and said, oh, that's why my feet were so tired after my long walk last week.
Wendy Baumgartner, you have been a joy. Thank you so much for giving us an education lesson on proper footwear and how to walk and everything to do with taking care of our feet as far as walking is concerned. I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Juanita.
Thank you. And join us in a couple of weeks. We're going to be talking about how to best prepare your home for those family members, guests, relatives, people who don't want to come over, people who you don't want to come over, but we're going to have a show that tells you all about how to prepare your home for the holidays. I thank you for joining us on The Beauty Files. Take care. We'll see you the next time. Bye-bye.